Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Halo 7 podcast with Dominic Lorenz, Cole Bailey, David Goodkind here with you in Free Agent Frenzy. How's gone on since the last podcast where Noah Syndergaard became an Angel? So much has gone down, but not to foreshadow too much as we record this on December 2nd, we're all locked out. Major League Baseball has shut down. The owners and commissioner and the players union did not come to a deal as of 11:59 p.m. Eastern time, December 1st. So baseball is on a ginormous pause right now, but that does not prevent us from talking about what has happened and what could potentially happen once baseball reopens its pearly gates and we get closer to 2022 season, spring training, and everything that goes involved with that. So lots to go in. Cole, David, welcome back in. Aaron Loop, Michael Lorenzen, Raisel Iglesias. This is where we are going to start the conversation today. The Angels moves two bullpens, and Lorenzen is a projected starter at the moment. David, I'll start with you. We really felt Raisel needed to happen, and it did. But right. With Loop and Lorenzen, what do you like about those two signings?
Well, for Loop, you give more insurance and I guess you alleviate the pressure a little bit from Raisel from doing those two inning saves all the time. Loop is a really great like eighth inning guy option right there. So I feel like he solidifies the back end of the bullpen. And for Lorenzen, he's got really good stuff. I know he's coming off a year of injury and didn't have his best stuff last year either. So, but I anticipate some sort of bounce back year for him. It's interesting to see that he is going to be slated for the rotation. I don't know if that's going to last. I assume that the six-man rotation is going to help him a bit. Overall, I think those are two really quality signings and definite net positives for the team.
Yeah, and before we get to Cole on his thoughts on Loop and Lorenzen, Loop gets 2 years, $17 million. Lorenzen, 1 year, $6.75 million deal. So favorable contracts. I thought Loop would get more, and Lorenzen, I kind of really didn't know what to make of what he could get in free agency. So for a $6.75 million deal for 1 year, I'll take that as a favorable contract. So with two favorable contracts, Cole, where do you sit on the Loop and Lorenzen train?
I'm with David, where I was really a fan of the Loop signing, especially now that you bring Raisel back, because I think you could make an argument that those are, well, I think they're obviously two of the top five relievers on the market. You could argue two of the top three if you're so bold. But I think that really locks down the last two innings of the game. And we saw that last year. It was just such a struggle getting games to Raisel. Like the stat was there 66-0 and leading after eight innings. But the problem was they couldn't get a lead to the ninth inning a lot of the times because the back end of the bullpen just wasn't where it needed to be. So I think when you bring in Loop like that, it just makes me feel so much more comfortable with that. And then beyond those guys, I think there's the makings of a good bullpen. You have those locked in. So you're not relying on Mike Myers in a super high leverage spot anymore. So maybe he gets better with less like responsibility. So I think I'm a big fan of that in terms of the bullpen.
Just piggybacking off that point about the back end of the bullpen. Now that you've solidified the eighth and ninth inning with Loop and Iglesias, it kind of alleviates the pressure off pitchers like Austin Warren, who could be maybe a seventh inning guy, or if Myers does take the tendered 1 year, $2.2 million deal that he was offered, he could be maybe in a lower leverage sixth, seventh inning type situation. And then you have, as Cole, as you put on Twitter, Jose Quijada is a good option in the bullpen, and the Angels have options now, and it seems a little more structured. So I like where the bullpen's going.
You could bring in another guy to pitch the seventh because there's still a lot of free agent relievers left. That was the one market that we didn't really see move as much as we thought. So I think you have the option to bring in another guy just to make like a really solid bullpen. But I think by bringing Loop and Raisel in, like you don't really have to, or you don't have the pressure to go get one of those guys whenever the lockout ends.
Andrew Chafin, the prediction is still alive. Andrew Chafin to the Angels. I'm just going to put that out there now.
I want to shout you out, though, because last podcast you mentioned Michael Lorenzen and you mentioned a left-handed reliever. So we have Nostradamus over here.
I'm happy it worked out that way.
yeah. But yeah, as for Lorenzen, I think he's more interesting than the prior one-year deals that the Angels have signed to starters in the past. Just because with guys like Harvey and Cahill and Teron and Quintana and all those guys, it was either like older guys that you couldn't see much projectability for, or in the case of Harvey, he was still young, but his stuff had pretty clearly started to deteriorate. Whereas Michael Lorenzen's only 29 years old and his stuff is still really good. Like, it's pretty easy, high 90s fastball with a pair of pretty good off-speed pitches. So I think in that regard, like, I'm pretty intrigued by that one. Though I do think I might have preferred him to be in the bullpen just because it's been so long since he's been a regular starter. Like, I think the
since
last time,
right?
Yeah, the last time he was a regular starter was 2015. So it's really like, that's a huge unknown there. I'm fine with him being a back end starter just because they were going to need one of those at some point this offseason. They couldn't just bring in all top end guys. So I think I'm fine with the move, and I think it could pay off because he's just got so much upside with the good stuff he has and the age. But I think it was a curious decision to just say right out that he's going to be in the rotation, to me at
right.
least.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept because Joe Maddon is so fluid with his roster. He likes to utilize guys in so many different ways, if it's in the batting order, if it's in the pitching rotation, bullpen, or starting. So, you know, maybe with the six-man rotation, we may see Lorenzen start it sometimes, but maybe in a 10-game, in 11-day stretch, maybe Lorenzen gets shifted to the bullpen a little bit, or maybe somebody else like a Barria or Suarez or Sandoval, you know, something in that regard where the fluidity between these pitchers can still work out. Now, what's funny to me is by getting Syndergaard and Lorenzen and pairing them in the rotation with Shohei Ohtani, the Angels may have the greatest pitching batting combination lineup, because those three guys are top seven in Major League Baseball in almost every statistical hitting category for pitchers. I find that extremely hilarious.
Just go get Greinke and top it off.
Joe Maddon could do some wacky stuff with that if he so chooses.
You know, I was telling David before we started this podcast, I said, what if there's a day Ohtani pitches and he only gets five innings and Lorenzen comes out of the bullpen? You don't need to bring in a bench guy. Lorenzen can bat for Ohtani, and watch, Lorenzen will go pimp out two home runs and call it a game, and the Angels pick up a nice successful victory that day. Like, that option now is in the arsenal of Joe Maddon. That is a scary thought in the most best way possible. It is great how you can think of that. But the Angels overall, Syndergaard, Loop, Lorenzen, Iglesias, four moves, all pitchers that the Angels have done so far in free agency. Are they flashy moves? No. Are they trashy moves? No. I feel they're kind of under the radar moves that keep the Angels in the direction that they wanted to go, and that was to address pitching. And I feel they've addressed the back end of the bullpen. There's still work to be done in the pitching side of things for the Angels, but they have addressed needs at the onset here before the lockout.
I put out a poll on the Halos Heaven account yesterday, and I listed all those guys and said that's who they added. And I asked, what grade would you give their offseason so far and why? And I think 55% of the responses was B. So that was the consensus generally was that they give it a B grade. But a lot of the replies said, like, love what they did with the bullpen, but they still need one more, like, front-end starter, which I think is what I agree with. Now, those options are dwindling a little bit, but I think they've gotten off to a pretty decent start to the offseason. Like, it's not over by any means, nor should it be, but I think I'm generally a fan of what they've done.
It's a very precarious situation because even though we knew the lockout was going to evidently happen, we've had a lot of traction within the last 2 weeks of free agency. If the lockout didn't happen, I was going to say the winter meetings would have been probably one of the most active winter meetings in a very long time.
Right.
Just based on everything going on. Now,
all the quality on the market too.
With the quality on the market. Now, David's pipe dream that did not come true yesterday was Stroman signing a 3-year, $71 million deal with the Cubs. And now this transfers into a whole conversation about what could have been. Stroman's not an Angel. Scherzer's not an Angel. Gausman, Ray, Seager, Simeon, Alex Cobb, all these guys are not Angels. So, David, I'll start with you, and we can kick the tires now on a conversation about Stroman. There's a lot of pitchers that did not choose the Angels. Out of that group, based on the contract they got with now their current team, who are you shocked that the Angels didn't reel in at the end of the day?
You know, it's probably Ray, actually. Stroman really seemed like he wanted to be a Cub. And, you know, it's hard to argue against, you know, playing at Wrigley and all that. I think getting outbid for Ray is pretty bad, especially within the division. And what's worse is the reports that he was supposed to be having dinner with Perry Manassian. So that conversation never happened, essentially. So they may not even have put an offer in front of him. So, I mean, we don't know what went down, but the fact that they weren't as competitive when, you know, we were hearing that Ray was probably their top target and he went for a pretty fair deal too. So at least at the market value. So I was pretty surprised just by the lack of competitiveness probably for Ray.
Yeah, and he gets 5 years, $115 million to go to, unfortunately, an AL West rival, the Seattle Mariners, who are on the uptick. They were a good surprise last season, didn't make the playoffs, but they're going to be a competitive force in the American League West and in the American League in general. So I agree. Robbie Ray, I think, based on being the Cy Young Award winner, 5 for $115, I felt was a very fair price for a lefty. Was he making Max Scherzer money of 3 for $150, which is 43 a year with the Mets? No, but I think Robbie Ray is maybe somebody that slips under our fingers a little bit. Cole, is there somebody in that pitching market, maybe other than Ray, that you felt maybe slipped through the Angels' fingertips that they could have had?
Ray's the one that comes to mind, as you guys mentioned. Also, I think what made that worse as well was the Ken Rosenthal report that said basically he was atop their wish list. And so right. The fact that he went to a division rival and they didn't even get their offer in front of them stung a little bit. I think the one that I'm a little bummed on is Kevin Gausman, because he got 5 for $110, which was just a little bit less than Ray. $22 million is really fair for him. And I think he would have given some stability to the rotation that doesn't exist right now, especially with the question marks that are Otani and Syndergaard and Lorenzen, just from an inning standpoint. Gausman's been like one of the highest innings guys over the last two seasons, which I think would have been nice. But I think $22 million would have been fair. And there was a report that they had interest, but obviously we saw him go to Toronto. So I think that's probably the one I'm most upset missing at. I think Stroman as well kind of stings, but as David said, it seemed like he wanted to be in Chicago, and that contract worked out pretty well for him because he got, I want to say, $23 million a year, which was more than what people thought. So
that was closer, almost 25.
It's 371. Right? Yeah, it's 371 with an option. So he'll be making 2 for $50 in the first 2 years, and then it's a $21 million option. Right. So I think that was a very good contract for him. So, but I think the Angels could have done that, but I think Gossman's the one that I look at as a missed opportunity because I think he's really good. And I think him sliding in between Otani and Syndergaard as like your heavy innings guy would have been really nice.
Oddly enough, those are two great guys. Ray and Gossman, I felt, yeah, based on their deals, slipped through the Angels' fingertips. But even more to me, I might sound like a broken record, but Alex Cobb. Two years, 29 for sure. The Giants. It felt very doable, and I believe he got a third-year option with the Giants. So for Cobb at his age and kind of had a reinventive year after some struggles in Baltimore prior to coming to the Angels, someone with familiarity, someone that came at a cheaper kind of hometown price tag, and you kind of swing and miss. Now, we don't know if the Angels ever had conversations with Cobb and it was like a bidding war, or he just chose the Giants over the Angels. We don't know that, and we may never know that. But I felt Cobb, I feel, his contract could have played in the Angels' favor and could have been a nice little piece. And then maybe the Angels could maybe risk it on somebody like Carlos Rodon or Danny Duffy or Kikuchi or even Grinke or somebody along those lines where you can maybe afford a slight bit of a risk if you brought back somebody like Cobb in that regard.
Yeah, I think what makes that one sting too is that he talked a lot about how much he would have liked to stay like during the season. Like, I remember at the trade deadline, he said, like, I really didn't want to leave, so I was happy when they didn't trade me. And he talked about later how he wanted to stay. So it seemed like he was very open to coming back. And I feel like he got $10 million a year, which I feel like was, like I said, was very doable and very fair. I don't hate the Lorenzen move as much as other people do. I think it could actually be good, but I think I would have rather them just paid up the extra $3 million to go after Cobb, honestly, because I think he's a pretty known commodity. He wanted to stay. So that one was That one was a little questionable as well. I thought they could have done that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a tough road. You know, the Angels weren't paying. We've known this from Perry Manassian. Pitching was the need. They weren't going after a big time shortstop. And there were some shortstops that left the market. Baez 6-for-140 with Detroit. Semien 7-for-175 with the Rangers, and Seager 10-for-325 with the Texas Rangers as well. So not only pitchers, but position players have left the board, and the best available players, that list is severely dwindled now. Yeah. Once we get to the other side of the lockout, and as I said, the pearly gates open and we can get back to free agency and trades. So before we get into the potential trade market, because I think we all three of us agree that if the Angels want an ace or a legit pitcher, they're probably going to have to go the trade market route, probably. Yeah. But based on free agent best available players, and this is position players, pitchers, you take it for what you will. I'll start with you, Cole. On your board, who is best available for the Angels to go after? Any position, pitcher, outfield, infield, you tell me, who is the best person on the market, best available for the Angels?
I'll still go with pitchers because that's obviously still a need even with what they've done. But the free agent market's tough because with that Gausman, Ray, and Stroman tier that we were talking about, they all provided some sort of upside in the rotation, but they also had a pretty high floor just because of the amount of innings that they pitch. But with the guys available, the two names that I think are pretty far and away above everyone else are Carlos Rodon and Clayton Kershaw. The problem with those guys is they both have pretty real injury risk. And when you've already got Syndergaard, who's probably not going to throw a lot of innings, Lorenzen, who hasn't been a starter in a long time, bringing one of those guys makes the rotation really volatile because you can't really pinpoint how many innings you're going to get from those guys. But they also are the highest upside, so it's a balancing act there. And then after those guys are – it's more innings eater type that I was mentioning, but it's also a lot lower ceiling, like your Zach Greinke types. So I still want to see them try to chase Rodon or Kershaw just because I think the upside is very high with those two, but I also think it's a pretty big risk, which is why I don't love the free agent market once the lockout ends.
Yeah. David, what do you think? So Rodon and Kershaw are Cole's preferred kind of angles. What are your preferred angles?
It's curious because I agree in some sense, although I really don't see Kershaw come to the Angels. That for me it's either the Rangers, Dodgers, yeah, or retirement. But Rodon makes a lot of sense. Also, there's the argument against it, obviously, with the injury concern. I mean, I don't really want to see Kikuchi. I wouldn't hate the move, but I wouldn't love it either. You know, the pitching market, it's barren, like you said. Now, Greinke makes a little bit of sense, but he's not the big addition we want. I think if we're looking the trade route, you turn the eyes towards position players, and there are holes to fill in the infield, especially. I think Carlos Correa is probably the most talented player left on the board. I don't know if there's much debate against that. I think the better fit for the Angels, money-wise and probably position-wise, is actually Chris Bryant. You could plug him in different places. Platooning is an option. I think, we always joke about how the Angels sacrifice pitching in order to acquire position players. But now with, you know, the free agent market, shaped the way it is with all the top pitchers off the board, I wouldn't hate actually looking towards position players and then addressing the rotation via trade. So for me, the top two guys to look at right now are probably Bryant and Correa. I wouldn't be surprised if they were in on Trevor Story. I know earlier in the season, his name was linked to us quite a bit. I think a middle infielder of a top caliber is something that they could eye, and I think they will be.
It's a perfect segue, I think, David, that you got to right there, is because for me, best available free agent in my eyes, the pitching market is barren and it's tough for free agents. And I think all three of us agree that the trade route is going to be the Angels' one and only move after probably Carlos Rodon. So yeah, for me, Chris Bryant is the free agent that I'm looking at the most because of this scenario in my mind. It could go two ways. The first way is the Angels trade for either Luis Castillo or Sonny Gray from the Reds. And this would be a very low trade. I don't think the odds of this happening would be insane, but an interdivision trade with the Oakland A's for Sean Manaea, because Oakland's got some pieces they need to trade. If you trade for one of those guys, and at this point, you're probably going to have to lose Brandon Marsh or Joe Adell. If Perry Manassian finds a way to bring in a legitimate starting pitcher and not give up Adell and Marsh, he may have just worked himself into GM of the year kind of, you know, conversations. Right. But if you do lose Marsh or Adell to get an ace pitcher, Chris Bryant is quite an insurance policy option. His versatility that he brings, that he can play any outfield position. He can play third base, even though we have Rendon, if Rendon needs a day off or something. He could be a nice backup first baseman. He played one game at shortstop, and even though he's never played a game of second base, I'm pretty sure if reuniting with Joe Madden and, you know, Madden says, hey, buddy, you want to get an infielder glove and play up the middle with David Fletcher? I'm pretty sure Chris Bryant's first response is, yes, sir, I'll do whatever you need to. We won a championship in 16 with the Cubbies. We'll do it again in Anaheim. Like, I love Chris Bryant's ability to be that versatile. His bat has decreased in the last couple of seasons, but he's still a quality player in the middle of your lineup. And to balance him with Ohtani, Trout, Rendon, Walsh, all when healthy, I feel it's a nice piece. The Angels could go into that round. I know there was conversations between the Angels, the Padres, and the Mets. Those are the top three before the lockout that were speaking about Chris Bryant. But I like Chris Bryant. I think I've kicked the wheels on it a little bit, and I think as each time I talk about it more, I really like it. Yeah. But if we go the trade market, what do the Angels do? You could call any team and try to get their ace, but that doesn't mean they're going to nibble and bite at your offer. The Angels have had a long history with making deals with the Cincinnati Reds. And that's where I know you both like Sonny Gray.
Yeah.
Yeah. Either him, any of those trio of arms that they've mentioned about trading, I think would work really well.
Let's go top tier for a second. Luis Castillo, Cincinnati Reds. He's their ace. Everybody's saying it's going to take a haul to bring him somewhere. What potentially would the Angels have to give to get somebody like a Castillo or an ace in a tradable market?
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
For Castillo specifically, I think Marsh or Adell have to be on the table. Like, you literally can't get a deal done without one of those two. I think the sticking point would be what comes after that. And we saw the John Morosi report from a couple days ago that they have talked about Castillo, the Angels, and the Reds, but the talks didn't advance very far because Cincinnati was asking for a lot. So maybe it's them asking for one of the others plus maybe Reed Detmers or Sam Bachman as well. And maybe the Angels are a little bit more hesitant to do that. But yeah, for Castillo specifically, it would need Marsh or Adell. And I think it would be probably a good bit more than that. So that's probably, he's probably the best arm on the trade market right now, but that's also the toughest one to pull off.
You know, I think it will cost us a haul to get Castillo, and he's a valued arm, great pitcher. You take it down a step to Sonny Gray, and David, I'll throw this one over to you. Sonny Gray, interesting arm. He had great days with the Oakland A's and then kind of has had some struggles when he was with the part of the Yankees rotation, and right, he's kind of had some up and down moments with Cincinnati. Could the Angels get away with trading for Gray and not letting Adele or Marsh go. Do you think that's even a possibility?
Yes, I do. I think age is up there. He's going to be 33 next year, so he's not a young guy. And like you said, his track record is a little over the place. I know his ERA last year was 4.19, so it's not like he's not an ace. So he's not going to require Marsh or Adele, I personally believe. So I think maybe a Jose Suarez gets it done and a couple other guys. It would not cost you Detmers or Bachman or Adele Marsh. I think he's the safer route to go. My big concern with him has nothing to do with him personally or anything like that. I think there's going to be a lot of competition for Sonny Gray after this lockout ends. And that's where the Angels are going to run into trouble, because some systems like maybe the Dodgers, I think, would be an interesting landing spot for him. So I think there are going to be some deep farm systems that will be competing against the Angels for his services. And that, I think that's where it comes. That's where it becomes a problem for the Angels. But I think they have the assets. If it was just one-on-one between them and the Reds, they have the assets that will require a trade for Sonny Gray, that don't kill the farm system and don't deplete, you know, next year's outfield. So the pieces are in place. It's just, I personally believe that market is going to really, really heat up the second trades are good to go.
If the whole market battles for Sonny Gray, like you predicted, like if the Dodgers get involved, the Yankees, or, you know, big name teams,
Red
that
Sox,
have maybe, Red Sox, something like that. And even though we think Adele and Marsh don't have to be in a deal for Sonny Gray, to put the Angels ahead of those bigger teams, maybe Adele and Marsh have to be in that conversation just to even get their name at the top of the list.
You see, I'd probably hold off then. I would just, it sucks, but you probably have to rely on the young kids then, and hopefully they pan out. I don't think I'd blow it up for Sonny Gray.
Yeah.
Good pitcher, but he's not the ace that's going to save the rotation.
Save the staff, correct.
Yeah, right. I think if I'm trading Adele or Marsh, I need like a top of the line, like
one-two pitcher.
Yeah, and I think Sonny Gray is a perfect like number three guy, and I think that's why he would fit in Anaheim, because he could slot in right behind Ohtani and Syndergaard. But if it took Adele or Marsh, I don't think I'd want to do it for him. I think I'd rather just maybe take the risk on Rodon on the free agent market, or maybe go to the A's and see what it would take to get one of their guys.
Yeah, and next year's I have yet to look at next year's free agent market in regards of starting pitchers.
The only one I knew was Barrios, but he signed his extension. So past that, I don't really know either.
Yeah, it would be a tough road to hoe. You know, the Angels, you know, we've seen it before where they make a couple of moves and then they stand pat, they're done, and they kind of roll with what they have. And the Angels do, they have young arms. Sandoval and Suarez proved themselves in 2021. Canning's trying to come back from an injury, and Berea is still kind of, he's kind of like Michael Lorenzen in a sense, bullpenny, but wants to be in the rotation. They kind of split in that sense. So the Angels have young starting pitching that if there is no more pitching moves in the starting rotation, and this is what we have, Ohtani, Syndergaard, and Lorenzen, and then the young kids after that, Angels going to have to roll with it, and hopefully they can continue playing well. And maybe once the July 31st trade deadline comes about, they make a splash in some way. But it's a very precarious situation, because the Angels could be looking at pitchers that we don't even know yet on the trade market, you know, with other teams, right. You know. So it's really hard to make those calls on the trades. We just know the Cincinnati, you know, the two or three for Cincinnati, because those have been reported already. So
yeah, and we know Cincinnati and Oakland are tearing it down, but we don't know the status of the other teams. So there could be another seller on the market that we are totally unaware of.
There was a Miami like rumor that they might be willing to trade one of their younger guys. And I know the Angels and the Marlins did have talks at the deadline that involved, I think the trade was Brandon Marsh for Max Meyer, if I remember right, and that got shot down. So that could also be an option if they want to revisit that.
Yeah. Now, in a trade between two guys, if the Angels had to trade Marsh or Adele to get an ace, who are you giving up? Cole, would you give up Marsh or Adele?
That one's so tough, man.
It is really tough.
This is where the tough questions happen. Yeah, it's on the Halos Heaven podcast.
That one's really tough. I think it's just whether you value ceiling or floor. Because obviously Adele has superstar level potential, but I think his worst case scenario is a lot lower than Marsh's. I think I'd keep Adele, because I think having another superstar potentially in that lineup would be huge, but it's hard because I really like Brandon Marsh as well. That'd be tough.
Same answer, same reasons. It's a really, really tough call. I think we've all been riding with Adele this long. I'm not ready to close the book on his Angels career. It just seems unfathomable to me. And I really like Marsh too, but you know, it's just like Cole said, that star power, it's kind of tough to give up so easily, you know. Yeah. That potential is, it's there, and we've seen it. We've seen flashes this last season of how good he can be. So yeah, it's just a really tough opportunity to pass up on seeing him stay in Angels uniform.
There's not many guys that I'd trade either one of them for, though.
Right.
Like, yeah, I think the only ones that come to mind are, like, I'd probably do one of them for Castillo. I think I'd probably do one of them from Frankie Montas from the A's. And then
I don't even know if I do that, because you ship them to Oakland, and then they become a problem for 10 years.
Yeah,
you know?
they're gonna slap you every time they see you. Yeah. 16 to 20 games a year.
Yeah, and then right. The other one might be maybe Pablo Lopez from the Marlins. I really like him as a pitcher, but I'm also kind of worried about his shoulder issues that he's been having. So those are the only three that I consider it for, but yeah, it's tough. I don't envy Perry Mnazian at this point.
No, in the trade market, I don't either. But so you both are going to stay on the Adele train. So you're going to leave Marsh off the island, and surprise, Brandon Marsh is joining the show. No, I'm just kidding now. He was secretly in the wings and you just trashed him under the radar. But honestly, for me though, it is hard. And I do see where you guys are coming from with Adele. I think in a very short, small sample size that we saw in 2021, on initial instinct, I would, and it's almost like Sophie's Choice at this point. It's like you have two great stars. It's like, well, it's got to be this one, or it's got to be this one. Like, what is it? I would probably keep Brandon Marsh as of right now, and that's so hard for me to say. I think just because his consistency has been a little stronger than Joe Adele's.
Yeah,
yeah. That's fair.
And his defense is a little stronger than Adele's right now. And again, it's not a knock to Adele at all by any means. Just basically just seeing what I saw in 2021. Because Marsh gives me a lot of our good old friend, the Red Baron, Cole Calhoun vibes for some reason. That speed, the defense, and kind of the gap-to-gap kind of mentality at the plate.
Yeah.
So I could see him as a top of the order. If Fletcher's at the bottom, or kind of vice versa in that sense.
Sure, yeah.
So maybe right now, and maybe you can pull a bigger haul for Adele than you can with Mar. I don't know. But on quick initial instinct, I would save Marsh barely, but it's like Sophie's choice.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is that different teams might value those guys differently. Like maybe one team prefers Adele based on where they're at. Maybe one team prefers Marsh. Like it's all a matter of personal choice with those two.
And that's the beauty of the trade market, where I don't envy Perry Manassian.
Yes.
The trade market is going to be so, I feel once the gates open and the lockout's over, the trade market might even be stronger than the free agent market in the sense.
Yeah, just because so many of those free agents have already come off the board already. So yeah, exactly. The teams that missed out are going to have to scramble for one of those guys.
Yeah. So in general, Angels have Syndergaard, Loop, Lorenzen, Iglesias locked and loaded for 2021. Their Angels are focusing on pitching, and it's a great start. Is this where we want to end? No, but it's a great start, and it's movement in the right direction, which is what us and Angels fans want to see, especially for players like Trout and Ohtani to find success in trying to win that championship at the end of the day. Now, with the lockout now happening, who is one player you are surprised that has not been signed that you thought was going to get signed first day of free agency? I have my choice. I'll put it out there first. Freddie Freeman.
The obvious one.
I think that's, you know, pardon me for going.
Do you think he's waiting for the DH? Do you think he's waiting for the DH stuff so he can make more money especially in those later years, because he could DH with the Braves? Increases his value for sure.
I wouldn't hold it against him. I think after winning a World Series championship, that monkey's off his back. And I think he feels a little more freer to do what he wants. But for me, I'm kind of dropped to the floor. Like when I think of the Braves, I think Freddie Freeman. And he's someone that reminds me of, like, he's the Mike Trout of the Atlanta Braves. Like, I could never see him wearing another uniform, like, ever. And there's potentials that the Dodgers, you know, are trying with Muncy's injury right now. He could go to the Dodgers and kind of go there and come back to California where he's from. And I love John Hammond's quote. The LA native can come back. It's like, no, dude, he was born and raised in OC. Like,
he was an Angels fan.
Let's not disrespect Orange County here.
His favorite player was Garrett Anderson.
Yeah, like left-handed power bats. But for me, no doubt it's Freddie Freeman who's a surprise that has not been scooped up, at least by the Braves at this point. So, David, for you, is there somebody that you're just kind of like dropped to the floor? Like, how the heck is he still available at this point?
Yeah, it's kind of between Clayton Kershaw and Kenley Jansen. Kershaw, I thought, you know, how quickly the Rangers are moving, that if they were going to get him, that this would be a prime opportunity before the lockout, since, you know, they were just piling on contract after contract. And I think they set a record for most spending an offseason or in a day or something like that.
$500 million.
Yeah. And so if they were going to get him, I thought that'd be it. Also, you know, the Dodgers lost Scherzer. I thought the rational move is right after that to bring Kershaw back. And then Kenley Jansen, with, you know, a little bit of the reliever market moving, he's a solid closer. And I feel like there's a lot of mutual interest with the Dodgers and bringing him back. So, for me, those are two logical things, at least for a local team in the Dodgers to make a quick move on, especially Kershaw. So I'm surprised that Kershaw's still available.
Yeah. As far as Jansen is concerned, I think a lot of the closer market was actually waiting for Rysel to make his decision, because right after we saw him sign, we also saw Melanson sign, and we saw Corey Knebel sign for closer money. So I think that's probably the reason there. But I do agree that I kind of expected Kershaw to either decide Dodgers or Rangers by now.
Right.
Yeah, because I know Kershaw ended last season injured.
Yeah.
And I know there was rumors that, at least back at the end of the season, like, was he going to need surgery? How much was he going to be out potentially of 2022 and so on and so forth? So I wonder if that takes the cake for the reason why maybe his free agency is a little slower.
Yeah, we still possibly have concrete answer on that, do we?
They knew it was an arm injury, but they never said what part of the arm, shoulder, elbow, wrist. Like, it's just kind of a state of unknown with Kershaw at this moment.
And you saw what happened with Muncy, where, you know, his thumb is not healed, sprain turns into a tear or whatever, and he's out probably until August of this year already, so maybe even longer. So who knows, who really knows what's going on with him. But I would have thought, you know, with Taylor giving the Dodgers the home team discount, that, you know, Kershaw wouldn't have this huge contract and probably still prefer to stay with the Dodgers. And I thought that'd be done by now. I really did, even with the injury history.
Yeah, it's a hard what's the right word for this? Not pill to swallow, because Kershaw's won a ring. He's made his money. So for him, it's, I would say, business as usual. And he's just kind of going through the free agent, you know, motions at this point. Yeah. So
the
it
thing
is
with
a,
him,
it's
the
precarious.
Thing with him is that he's still very good when he's healthy.
Right.
Like,
right.
But it's, that's just been a problem recently. So maybe teams are a little scared about that.
Yeah. So it's an interesting case to be. I feel there's probably 1,000 different options at this point. You know, I know I've read some places that Nick Castellanos still being available is a shock to many that need an outfielder at this point. Which, hey, if the Angels have to trade Adele or Marsh, maybe Nick Castellanos instead of Chris Bryant, who the heck knows? And the funny thing is, we were talking about Chris Bryant and Joe Maddon being a reunion. Technically, Castellanos played with the Cubs during the Joe Maddon era. So, again, how in our conversations on this podcast, it all relates to Joe Maddon's former history with players.
Seems like he's liked his former players based on his the moves they made so far, at least last offseason.
Right.
Yeah, so there's always some sort of a way when it comes to Joe Maddon having his pick of the litter with his former castmates. But a lot of free agent frenzy to be had once the lockout is lifted, which is unfortunately TBD, to be decided between the owners and commissioner and the MLB players union. So we have to sit back and we have to enjoy the holidays without baseball at this moment. My early projected guess, as we we'll talk minimally here for a second here near the end of the podcast on the MLB lockout, is my initial reaction is a deal doesn't get done until after the new year. I think they're going to spend December. And I'm thinking it's going to happen in mid-January after MLK weekend. And it's going to be a quick 2.5-3 week dash of free agency and trades that's going to make our heads spin as people of the media before pitchers and catchers report in the beginning of February. That's just my initial instincts on the negotiation talks, timeline-wise.
Yeah, I think the date to watch for personally is February 1st, because I think if you go that long without a deal or momentum toward a deal, it starts to get a little dicey, because spring training's obviously mid-February, and that's the point where you start to lose out on money. So I think they'll get it done by then, just because they both know that they can't be canceling games at this point. But I think it might take a while until then, and it might be very long and very painful negotiations. But I think probably the beginning of February would be my guess, but who really knows at this point, honestly.
Yeah, David, what do you think? Like, we know it's going to go into 2022. I feel if anything happened before, even if it's before Christmas, I think we'd all be shocked that both sides actually figured their stuff out in a doable amount of time.
Yeah, I remember reading during the last CBA negotiations that this year was going to be rough. Even 5-6 years ago, that they circled this year as being a problem. From the sound of things, they're nowhere near close to finding any sort of common ground. Early February, mid-February, my guess, probably mid-February, they get something done. I would not be surprised if games were canceled, especially, you know, going into March. They just sound so far apart. I really hope I'm wrong on this one, but it's going to be sticky. It's going to be ugly. We've already seen it on day one, players and MLB going at it, especially with the picture thing and
the whole website.
Biggest waste of time, I feel, in baseball. I feel bad for the graphic designer who had to go in and scratch everything off.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot of work. But Rob Manfred probably didn't help this case today. You know, the owners are going to try to bleed this thing as much as they can to get as much money for themselves. And, you know, it's going to be a war. Just buckle up. It's going to be a war. I don't think we're going to have anything to, we're not going to lack any talking points. I think this is going to be ugly, and I think it's going to be public too.
Absolutely. I feel it's always a public smear of affection, that they have a disdain for each other, but they're going to try to do it nicely with subtle jabs until the deal is done. And once the deal is done, they'll shake hands, kiss babies as if nothing bad ever happened.
Right. At the end of the day, canceling games costs everybody money, and nobody wants to lose money. So they're going to get, I really do think they're going to get something worked out, but it's going to be a wildfire until that point.
Yeah, the only part of the negotiations that's actually been put forth in the media is the proposed playoffs that are going to potentially and probably will be expanded. We don't know to what depth, but I want to get your guys' opinion on the proposed playoff plan that came out a couple days ago, and it's kind of a numerous process. It's 7 teams from the AL, 7 teams from the NL, so a 14-team playoff format. The best record in the AL and NL get a first round bye, just kind of like the NFL. Then, if you're ranked in seeding purposes of 2, 3, or 4, you would host seeds 5, 6, and 7, but you get to choose who you play, and you get all 3 games at home. That part of the puzzle is where I cross the line a little bit. It's like, what are we all like 6th graders on the kickball
court
choosing their
right?
teams? Yeah. I'm cool with expanding the playoffs. You know, I think that the point of expanding the playoffs that's going to suck is if teams that are kind of baselining 500 or sub 500 get in. I think that's going to tip the scales a little bit and not make it great.
Yeah.
But the first round bye doesn't bother me. If you have the best record, that doesn't bother me. Seeds 2, 3, 4 playing 5, 6, 7 doesn't bother me. It's when you start picking and choosing who you're playing. That's where it's like, who's making that decision at that point? So, Cole, what do you think about this proposed playoff bullet point format juggernaut.
It's definitely strange.
It reminds me of the NFL. Like, the first thing I think of is NFL playoffs.
Yeah, because that's what they do right now. It's first he gets a bye, and then it's 2-7, 3-6, 4-5.
Yeah.
But I don't think I like the 14 teams. Like, I think I wouldn't mind going to 12, but I think 14 is where you might get, like, you might get some not great teams in there. But I do think the idea of the bye is intriguing, and I do think the three game first round is also interesting, because it kind of eliminates the randomness of the wild card game, which is fun, but you also have some very good teams that go home after one game. So I think I wouldn't mind the three game wild card series that they've talked about, but I think everything else is where they kind of start to lose me there. I think I'd prefer shorter, and then picking teams is just kind of very strange.
Very child's play.
Yeah.
In a sense. David, what do you think of the juggernaut laughable situation that we're probably going to have to endure at some point?
Yeah, I'm with you on the whole picking opponent thing is ridiculous. I'm all over the place, though, when it comes to the rest of the proposal, I guess. I'm going to wear my biases on my sleeve for a second. This would definitely help the Angels.
Yes, absolutely.
a team that's almost always around 500, and in the past when they were competing for playoff spots, they would miss it by like a game or two. That this would have put them in. So, yes.
Toronto
in the playoffs is always a good thing.
Toronto and Seattle were probably crying right now,
right?
Wishing that why couldn't this be 2021? Right.
And so many times we've been through that with, you know, as Angels fans, and I think the bye is both a good idea and a bad idea. In that, you know, sometimes you want to keep playing games, especially if you hit a hot streak right at the end. You don't want that long break. I know it helps arms and stuff, but it could cool off a lineup. So there's pluses and minuses with the option of a bye. And then also a downside would be it just, you know, 162 game season just doesn't mean much anymore. It's right. It sort of lessens the intensity of regular season baseball, and that you have, you know, 14 teams making it. So there's more room for error. It's like, you know, that's what makes college football so exciting. You lose two games, you're pretty much eliminated from a playoff. So I think, you know, in such tight division races, expanding does take away some of that enjoyment from the regular season and some of that intensity that people feel, especially in September. But as an Angels fan, I would love it. It would help get us to the playoffs more.
Just take the extra spots where they're available. Who cares who we're playing in the wild card round? Just go.
I don't care if we get in legitimately. Let's just get in there and see what happens. Having Ohtani and Trout in the playoffs is good for baseball. It just is. So
exactly.
Pluses and minuses.
You know, this proposal and the whole MLB lockout process, you know, it all comes down to money. Who gets the revenue share? Who gets benefits?
Right.
And, you know, I'm not going to get deep dive into the numbers at this point, because it's just players want what they want. Ownership and commissioner wants what they want. And it's a battle of millionaire and billionaires and other factors going into it. And that's just that's over our heads here, folks. We're predicting.
We are not experts. We are not experts in labor negotiations.
We
are
not.
I'm a liberal arts major. Okay. I don't know business and math.
We got rid of math. We all take our one little math class in college and call it a day, and that stuff never comes back. We know how to add. We know how to subtract. We know how to multiply, and we know how to divide. That's all we need to do in this life. But, you know, so much to get into. Free agent frenzy is on a pause with the MLB lockout. So Angels have some work to do. A lot of teams in Major League Baseball have some work to do as we get towards the end. But for right now, that is another episode of the Halo 7 podcast with your hosts, Dominic Lorenz, Cole Bailey, and David Goodkind. Until next time, we will have much more coverage at making predictions at some point. We're going to get together. That's all we can do.
We might finally do that mailbag as well that we've been talking about.
I have a feeling
we're going to have time.
I think we're going to do a mailbag and maybe do it on Twitter Spaces, do a live mailbag and see what we can do. You know, we got to spice it up here. It's December. It's the holidays. We got to find
something to talk about too.
People are getting stressed and crazy with the holidays. So why not add another stressor and let's do a live Twitter and see what the heck can happen live on social media.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes.
We'll see how that goes. We sound so confident right off the bat. We sound confident as heck right now. But for now, I'm Dominic Lorenz. That's Cole Bailey and David Goodkind. Thanks for joining us here on the Halos Heaven podcast. And until next time, keep looking on the Halos Heaven website for our 2021 player reviews, minor league player interviews coming up now with the lockout. And you never know, check us out on Twitter when we do our fabulous Twitter space at some point. Until next time, cheers to baseball, and hopefully you return to us very, very soon.